Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. I'm Don Marsh. Sad to say, but many of the streets and avenues in this country named to honor Dr. Martin Luther King are less than impressive. We'll be talking about plans to upgrade them here and in other parts of the country on today's program. But first, chances are that you have old, expired, or unused prescription drugs and medications in your household, some of which may still be potent and hazardous. They should be gotten rid of in a safe and responsible way. But how? Many people have been used to just flushing them down the toilet, but that is anything but safe. Saturday is the DEA, or Drug Enforcement Administration's, National Prescription Drug Take-Back Day, probably the best way to deal with the old drugs before they fall into the wrong hands or help contaminate the environment. With me in studio to talk about it, Dr. Ross Heller, Associate Professor of Emergency Medicine at St. Louis University. Chad Sabora is Vice President of Legislative Advocacy and Director of Media at St. Louis Heroin Help. He is a former heroin addict who became addicted after getting hooked on prescription drugs. Pharmacist Amy Tiemeyer is Assistant Professor at the St. Louis College of Pharmacy. She joins us by phone from an event focusing on drug disposal sponsored by the pharmacy. Thank you all so much for being with us. Nice to have you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks. Amy, I'd like to begin with you, Amy, and just kind of give us the overview, if you will, of the need for this take-back campaign.
Sure. Thanks, Don. We are seeing more and more from a pharmacy perspective, and I'm sure Dr. Heller can speak to this as well, that people have lots of medicines in their homes, and a lot of times those are expired medicines or medicines they're no longer using, and that really poses a danger from many perspectives. One is accidental poisonings, whether you're taking something that you shouldn't be, or maybe the kids are getting into it. There can be an accidental poisoning that way. Also, you know, we're finding out more and more that people are stealing medications out of family member or friends' homes and taking those, especially narcotics. And really kind of that's kind of the first step in that pathway to illicit drug use and things like that is starting with those prescription medications. And so we're encouraging people, if there's anything expired or unused that's in their medicine cabinets, that we want them to get it out and to destroy it properly through this event that the DEA is hosting nationwide.
Is there a particular drug or medication that is a special problem?
Well, the ones that we are seeing as the biggest problems, and I think Dr. Heller and Chad could probably speak more to this, but any of the narcotic medications, any of the ones that we call controlled substances that have an addictive potential are the ones that we're seeing. People are using those to get high and experimenting. Teenagers are experimenting. There's a perception that maybe because it's a prescription medication that it's safer than trying something that already has a stigma of being dangerous, such as heroin or marijuana, things like that. And so that's really where we're seeing some of the problems.
But just to be clear, during this take-back campaign, all medications that are in the medicine cabinet that are no longer useful should be done away with.
Correct. And that's prescription medications as well as over-the-counter medications. And I would say most people probably have those. You know, we go through a cold and flu season like we just had or in previous years, and we get something at the pharmacy and those medications, you know, we use a couple of them, we feel better, and then we stick them in the closet in case we use them later, need them later. And, you know, a year goes by, and then they're probably expired. So I would say a lot of people probably have those over-the-counter medicines in their medicine cabinets as well or their hall closets. And so we want to make sure that they know that they can get rid of those as well.
Let me turn to Dr. Heller now. With regard to the emergency medicine situation, where does that stand? What are you seeing?
Well, we see a combination of things. People will not, when a prescription's written, we really request patients to take the entire prescription. So if we give them an antibiotic, for instance, we expect them a 7-day antibiotic to take all 7 days. That often doesn't happen. And it's amazing how many people will actually practice their own medicine. They'll get sick and a relative, a friend, a brother, sister, father, mother will give them an antibiotic. And they'll come in not better having taken this antibiotic that was inappropriate for them to use. So that shouldn't be done. On the narcotic side, this is a grave problem. At least a third in studies of patients who come to the emergency departments are often intoxicated on some substance. And while it used to be more of the hard drugs of the heroines, the cocaines, et cetera, the use of of the prescription drugs has increased dramatically. I think there was an article in the paper this morning talking about that the number of people who overdose and die due to prescription medications far exceeds that of using heroin or cocaine or others. So people come in, they get these medications, they share them, they do steal them. There are parties where kids take their parents' medications, and it's a very grave problem.
Is it possible to make a case that part of the problem is the fact that doctors may be over-prescribing some of these drugs?
Well, I think what's happened is a combination of things. There's a push by the accreditation bodies to get doctors to take on patients' pain more. And a failure to do that, a failure to deal with patients' pain, is bad for a hospital, bad for the doctors. So I think there has been a push for doctors to prescribe more medications. And patients come in demanding more pain medications. There really is a struggle often in an emergency department about those issues. And certainly, I think that too many prescriptions are written today, and doctors do not want to fight with patients about this issue.
Big pharma must play a role, too, because the pharmaceutical industry is very aggressive in marketing a lot of these products.
We actually don't see big pharma in the emergency departments. They don't come in and market to us. But I think the patients know what they want.
I mean.
Yes.
Yeah.
And they certainly know what they want, and they often come in demanding one pain medicine over another. And I think doctors don't want to have those fights. They don't want to have those fights in their offices. They don't want to have those fights in the emergency room with patients to give them these scripts. And they concede and will write these prescription medications.
Before I turn to our other guest, Chad Sabora, I want to play a clip from a guest we had on the program just a few days ago, earlier this month, David Sheff. He has written the book Clean, Overcoming Addiction and Ending America's Greatest Tragedy. This is an offshoot of an earlier book called Beautiful Boy, in which he described the addiction and the problems resulting from the addiction of his son, Nick. Let's play that clip because it's relevant to what we're talking about today.
Right now, the biggest problem in the country that's killing people the most are prescription medications. And there's a false sense of security around a lot of young people who think that they can't be as bad. Parents, too, they think they can't be as bad because they're created by a pharmaceutical. They're not buying them on the streets. They do buy them from each other, and they steal them from parents' medicine cabinets. And it's the number one killer in America that is non-natural. Number one overall, adults and children. I went to a doctor because I sprained my ankle. I left there with a prescription for 20 Vicodin with a refill for another 20. Now, I took them for a couple of days, so all of a sudden I had 35 or whatever it was Vicodin sitting in the closet. You either lock those away, you bring them back to the pharmacy, you dispose of them. You don't want them sitting around.
That is David Sheff. He was a guest on this program just a few days ago. He's the author of Clean, Overcoming Addiction and Ending America's Greatest Tragedy. Well, that takes us now to Chad Sabora. And Chad, this is kind of your story, I gather.
Yes, it is.
Tell us that story.
Well, I'm a recovering heroin addict, but my addiction started with prescription pain medication, which led to a six-year struggle to, once I got on heroin, to finally be able to get off and find some recovery.
How did you get started with the prescription meds?
From getting prescribed from a psychiatrist.
What were you taking?
I was taking Vicodin, and then it went up to Percocets, and then when those weren't doing the job, I went up to OxyContin, which is a much stronger narcotic. And then once that wasn't doing what I needed anymore, that is when we make the transition from prescription painkillers to heroin. There's going to be a point where you just can't take anymore. During my active addiction on the painkillers, there was one point of time when I was taking up to 50 Vicodin a day. Now, the amount of Tylenol in there was making me sick. My body just couldn't tolerate it anymore, but I was completely under control of all these opiates. So I switched to heroin, which is about what I see from my work with addicts, about 80 to 85% of heroin addicts start on prescription pain medication. It is the precursor to full-blown heroin addiction.
How old were you when all of this started?
This all started when I was about 29, 30. I'd experimented when I was a teenager, but my real addiction started with the painkillers.
Doctor, does it sound like a familiar story to you?
It is a familiar story. We don't really trace out everybody's addiction pattern in the emergency department, but we see many young people who come in near death. And it's shocking, the backgrounds. People would be surprised with the backgrounds. Chad and I spoke. He was an attorney. We see many white-collar type people with this, and often that's how they get started. Mm.
Amy Tiemeyer, you know, it seems to me that while we're talking about older prescription drugs and those things that are just kind of stashed in the medicine cabinet, there ought to be some form of security for these meds when they're actively in use. I mean, if kids are going into their parents' and friends' medicine cabinets, that's a little too easy, it seems to me.
It is, and it's something that we are trying to bring a little bit more awareness to the community about, because we do hear this phrase, you know, that they'll go into the medicine cabinets. You know, I've even heard stories of people who will go to open houses, not for any interest in buying the house, but because they just want to look through people's medicine cabinets because it's convenient and easy. And so to that end, you know, if somebody who is on a prescription narcotic pain medicine, and there are lots of people who have very legitimate needs for those pain medications. And but if they're on those and they have any concerns, or if they know that there's going to be people in the house that you know, they just don't know very well, or any kind of event, or if they're not sure about their kids or their kids' friends, that they really keep those locked up or with them at all times, just to prevent that diversion potential.
Chad, is this something you would endorse? I assume so.
Oh, definitely, because, there were, I mean, as was stated previously, I mean, this is an epidemic. I mean, opiates are killing, and, you know, I think the average in the state of Missouri from a report just released is that an average of 500 people a year are dying from opiate overdoses. And you'll read about the heroin overdoses in the papers, but most of these overdoses are prescription pain medication. And people think it's safe, and they don't realize it's not. There's plenty of active addicts out there that do prefer prescription pain medication because they can control the dose, because you're never sure about what you get off the streets. And a wonderful movie in the late 80s, early 90s called Drugstore Cowboy, which kind of chronicled that a little bit. So, I mean, there's a black market need for these narcotics just as much as there is for drugs such as heroin, methamphetamines, and cocaine.
Well, there's obviously a lot of them out there, Doctor. I saw one of the figures concerning one of the most recent take-back campaigns that more than 244,000 tons of drugs were picked up.
It wouldn't surprise me a bit. I mean, the number of scripts written is enormous, and the number of pills per script is enormous. And again, when the typical person who would come in with an ankle sprain, or the typical person would come in with some sort of acute pain, really doesn't need a long duration of these medications before they can switch over to a Motrin or an Anaprox. But even in the computerized programs, often the minimum you can give is 20 or 30 unless you override that. So there are lots of these out there, and they're easily accessible. And then there's another group of people who we believe come in to get the script so that they can sell it on the street. Each Vicodin, which Chad could probably tell me better, is worth anywhere from $10 to $15, a small dose of Vicodin on the street.
Vicodins go for, depending on the strength, if you go up to something as Norco, which is a stronger Vicodin, they go to $4 to $5 a piece. Benzos, such as Xanax and Valium, are very high market too. And then when you get into the stronger prescription drugs, such as Oxycontin, Percocets, morphine, Dilaudid, those go for about $1 a milligram. And the strongest dose of Oxycontin is 160 milligrams. Now, $1 a milligram equals $160 a pill. So a bottle of 90 Oxycontin is a lot of money. And as you know, you know, we were talking about the prescribing, I mean, what the previous author stated about the American tragedy right now, it's not just the deaths. I mean, it's the tragedy that, you know, Americans consume 99% of all the Vicodin that's produced for the whole entire world. I mean, that is a tragedy of our nation right now, that is how much we consume.
That's an incredible statistic. I have to take a break. You just heard from Chad Sabora. He's with St. Louis Heroin Help. Also with me in studio is Dr. Ross Heller, Associate Professor of Emergency Medicine at St. Louis University. Joining us by phone is Amy Tiemeyer, Assistant Professor at the St. Louis College of Pharmacy. Welcome back to continue our conversation about the DEA's Prescription Drug Take-Back campaign. It's underway in many places, but Saturday is the big day, and we'll be telling you more about that when we come back. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Hello again and welcome back as we continue our conversation relative to the Drug Enforcement Administration's Prescription Drug Take-Back Day, which is going to be held this Saturday. We'll have more on that in just a little bit. But, Amy, let me come back to you with regard to this campaign got started, it seems to me, a little earlier this year, and it's been going on all week. This is an expanded collection effort, is it not?
This is, and we actually started the St. Louis Medication Disposal Initiative 3 years ago, and we've always done it the week prior to the National DEA Take Back Day. And really the focus was trying to reach the seniors in the city, knowing that there are problems with access and transportation, and so we wanted to make sure that we were trying to reach and get to that population to really bring the message across about proper med disposal. We know that geriatrics have usually a very high number of medications, and also thinking about accidental poisonings that many times those happen in grandparents' homes and things like that. So this week we've been going to some senior apartments in the city as well as some recreation facilities and also to some city churches to spread the message and also to provide a way that they can bring their medicines right back there and not have to wait for the Saturday event, just to make it a little bit more convenient for them and to get the message out.
Well, I think folks who saw the morning paper learned a little bit more about that today, including seeing a couple of nice pictures of you, Amy T. Meyer, as they talked about this campaign. What can you tell us about Saturday and what people should and could be doing?
Right. So, you know, I think the simplest thing is we're getting to spring, hopefully a little bit later than I think we wanted as far as those temperatures go around here. But, you know, as you're thinking about spring cleaning, to start thinking about doing that with your medicine cabinets as well. And for the Saturday event, it's from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. And this is, again, like I said, a nationwide event. And so most police precincts around the area will be participating. Some of them will actually be hosting the take back at the police precinct. Sometimes they'll do it at a local community center or things like that. In the city, they're actually hosting them at some of the Walgreens locations. But you can actually go to the college website, www.stlcop.edu, and there's a link there, and you can type in your zip code from anywhere around the country and find out the locations that are closest to you.
Yeah, that's a very handy website, and we have a link to the same thing on our website at stlpublicradio.org. Another question with regard to getting rid of these things, and Amy, I guess I'd best take this to you. Why not just throw them in the trash?
Right. So, you know, that is what we used to recommend for the long time, that people flush them or, you know, put them in the trash possibly, and we're trying to kind of give a new message to people. And the reason is because as our testing standards have gotten better for testing water quality, we're now able to test our water, and we're finding out that some of our waterways are having amounts that are traceable of things like antibiotics and hormones. And it's getting to the point where some of our aquatic life, like fish and frogs, are being affected. And so, you know, if you think back to your basic science classes back in elementary school and middle school, if you think about that food chain, if one part of the food chain is affected, eventually that left unchecked, that food chain, people down the line will be affected. So if we're seeing effects in our fish and our frogs, you know, if we leave this unchecked and don't start thinking about it and trying to find ways to prevent it or treat it, that we could be in a situation where we're starting to see effects in humans down the road.
Dr. Heller, this is scary. I mean, this, when you start talking about the fact that these things that seem so innocent in their little plastic bottles in our medicine cabinet can have that kind of effect on the environment.
It's very scary. I mean, when Amy was talking about the elderly population, I jokingly tell people that I see about one drug per decade of life for most patients if they're healthy, and 1.5 drugs per decade of life if they're marginally ill, and at least 2 drugs per decade of life for people who are sick. So, you know, somebody who's in their 80s might be on up to 16 medications, and this is fairly consistent out there. And these medications, besides just the narcotic-based medications, have all kinds of effects. You know, people may be on 4 or 5 medications for blood pressure. They can be on multiple medications for diabetes. And having those in a cabinet, having those accessible to others, not being able to regulate how you take them. We often get patients in who have lots of sequela to inappropriate taking of these medications. It's hard to do. And then having them disposed of out there does exactly what the studies suggest, that what Amy says is at least true and probably worse.
Chad, it seems to me, given what you've said and what we've learned, that there is a fair amount of sophistication out there amongst people who want to make money off of selling these drugs, not to mention the people who are using them.
Correct.
Yeah. Well, how does one become so knowledgeable?
You know, as an addict, we have to learn to survive. And part of that inactive addiction is surviving by constantly getting our drugs. We come up with different ways and schemes. We manipulate, and we find a way to get what we need. But you know what? We also do the same thing in recovery. So, you know, although there has been some talk about, you know, what we do in active addiction, you know, we do recover from this. You know, and that's, you know, something I definitely want to get out there, that there is hope, even though we hear about all these deaths. There's more out there than just what's going on with all that.
One thing, Amy, that I wanted to bring up with you is the question of expiration dates. I mean, people might be not pay any attention to the expiration date or think that, let me just put it that way. People might not pay much attention to the expiration date, but they should.
Right. Yeah, people don't pay attention to it. They don't, you know, they think, well, it's printed on my bottle, but maybe the manufacturer had a different expiration date. The other thing I really commonly hear, and I just heard this at when I was talking with a senior in an apartment building just a few days ago, was that, you know, they say, well, I might need it later. And especially when you're talking about a population who, you know, geriatrics and, you know, our city population, that money is tight, and those prescriptions many times for them are not cheap, and so they really want to make sure that they're not throwing away something that they could get use out of later. And so, you know, this one lady I was talking to, she had some ibuprofen that had expired in 2010, and she was really pretty adamant about not getting rid of it. You know, it's expired, but I know that it probably won't be harmful to her, but I did have to advise her just to say that if you take this is probably not going to be effective for you at all. And that's where we get concerned, is people holding on to things for a really long time, and then they have a condition come up and they say, oh, I've got a bottle for that, or I've got a medicine for that in the cabinet, and they start taking it expecting that they're going to get better, and they're actually maybe delaying treatment for a serious condition, and that becomes very concerning.
So we have to tell people to watch those expiration dates when they're collecting stuff to turn in on Saturday. We have a caller I'd like to bring into the conversation right now. It's Jean, and I think it's, is it Platon, Missouri, Jean? I don't recognize the name.
Yeah, I just wanted to remind people that although these opiate pain medications can be abused, that there are patients out there who seriously, seriously rely on this. They're legitimate medications, and I had survived what turned out to be a serious injury and was dealing with a severe chronic pain for probably 4 years of my life. And I have to tell you, I am so grateful that these medications were available to me. If I had had to live with that intense level of pain, I promise you I would have committed suicide.
Well, Jean, go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
And instead I'm back to work. I've been able to dramatically cut back the dosage. Thanks to physical therapy and exercise and meditation.
Jean, thanks for making that point. I don't think we're here saying that there's no value to the medications. They certainly do have value. Doctor, you would certainly subscribe to that.
Oh, no. Yeah. For people with these chronic pain problems or, you know, I mean, the main reason a lot of these, initially the pain medications came out were for people with bad cancers who had these terrible pain problems. So I don't think clearly those folks who need the pain medication should get them. This is a different group. Yeah. And the ones that are left in people's cabinets are people who didn't need them. Yeah, because if you need them, you take them as per your schedule.
Yeah, I watched my mom die of lung cancer. I mean, I thank God there were pain medication available, sure, because that was one of the most horrible deaths I've ever seen. But I, you know, I see that side, but I've also lived in the underworld of this. So I know both aspects. And although they're necessary, the greatness of their risk and abuse is just not known well enough.
They have to be managed properly, right, Amy? We have to put a bottom line on this. Give us your final thought before we say goodbye, Amy.
My final thought, I'm glad that Jane called and brought that perspective in again. And it's really kind of a balance for medical professionals and those of us in education trying to help our future practitioners to understand that. But I think for the general population, for those listening, just to say that, clean out your medicine cabinets, be safe about it. Even if it's, you don't have any narcotics, but there's that safety aspect of potential poisoning, you accidentally taking something in the middle of the night, a child getting into it or a pet getting into it. And so, don't hold on to those things, but get rid of them and do it in a way that's really most beneficial to the environment and bringing them back on Saturday from 10 to 2 p.m. in your local community.
That's right. The area-wide drop-off day is this Saturday from 10 to 2, as Amy has just indicated. There are various locations. It's a national campaign, by the way. There are various locations. We have a link to the DEA website where you can find the locations nearest you. It's a very it's a site that's very easy to navigate and will tell you exactly where you can take those drugs that have been collecting in your medicine cabinet. Amy T. Meyer, thank you so much for being with us. A pleasure talking to you. Dr.
Thank
Ross
you,
Heller, thank you for being with us. Good to see you. And
good
Chad
Sabor,
thank you so much for being a part of this program.
Thank you.
Nice to see you as well. Coming up, a new way to honor the memory and the legacy of Dr. Martin Luther King. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU.